Right now it's time for the Positive Chats podcast. And on the phone we have the author of the book, The Leftovers, Baylor, Betrayal, and Beyond. It's Matt Saman. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
Looking forward to talking with you. Matt, a former University of Baylor basketball player. What do you think of the Final Four and the March Madness right now? Did things going as you had figured, or we got some surprises?
Definitely picked Baylor to go farther than they did. So that was a little bit of a surprise, even though UNC as a 9 seed, I mean, that was just a really tough draw in the second round. But it's really fun to see I would consider Villanova a blue blood at this point, because anybody that's won 2 national championships in the last 6 years, they're pretty good. And so to have the quality of programs and teams in the Final Four is pretty special.
Yeah. And how about those Peacocks, huh?
That's probably the most what I enjoy most about March Madness is, you know, when you look at the difference in their yearly budgets that a team like Kentucky has and the Peacocks have, and for them to, and the enrollment, for them to be competitive and beat them, I just feel like there's no other sporting event like it in the world.
And it's just been the same old for us here at the University of Toledo. Our men's and women's team always do well. They both won the MAC, but they failed in the tournament and don't make the big game. So another same old for the University of Toledo Rockets, but maybe one year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, we're here to talk about your experiences at Baylor and things that happened there and what you've learned from it. But first off, let's get to know you a little bit better. What you doing right now?
I'm the head boys basketball coach at Grapevine Faith Christian School, and it's right outside of Dallas-Fort Worth. And this is my 9th year here, just coming off of a great season where my guys really overachieved and play hard and love my school, and married to an amazing woman named Jana. And so life is good.
Right. Is that what you've kind of studied to be, is a being a coach and a phys ed teacher?
Now, I was a speech communications major in college, and sadly I did that because I didn't know what I wanted to do besides basketball. I asked the seniors at the time, what's the easiest major? And they said, where I'd have the least amount of homework. And they said, oh, communications. And so I went into that field. But the cool thing with that is with teaching and coaching, I actually used that degree every day. And so
awesome.
I didn't go into it for the right reasons, but it's helped me a ton.
Well, in The Leftovers, your story kind of begins before college. Tell us about how things worked up from when you were young to when you were at Baylor.
Yeah, so I grew up in a Christian home, and I had a lot of head knowledge. But when I was 9 years old, I fell in love with the game of basketball and really changed my habits, and the way that I approached the game was different than my friends, who it was more of just a hobby for them. For me, it was just a daily, you know, almost ritual the things that I would do and how I would practice. And I had these really big goals as a young kid. And the problem that I ran into is I started to develop this weird, you know, theology that I think a lot of people run into, which is if I'm a good person and I say I believe in God and I do the right things, well, then the goals that I have and what I want will happen right in the way that I want them to happen. Mm. And that is what happened to me was I made varsity I made my freshman 8 team, varsity as a sophomore, which were my goals. And then going into my senior year, I signed with Baylor to play basketball there. And so all these things that I wanted to happen did happen in that order.
So was Baylor like your first choice?
Yeah, I'd visited a couple schools. I didn't know much about Baylor at the time, but I visited SMU. Just didn't get the same vibe from the head coach at the time. But Dave Bliss at Baylor really sold me on the university and what his vision and what we could do there basketball wise. So that was the big thing for me, was Coach Bliss selling me on the school and his vision.
And at your time at Baylor, that's when some trouble started for you and also for the university and the team. Tell us about your personal experiences there first.
Going into my senior year, we were about to be really good. And I was a part of a team and a program that I loved. At the end of my junior year, I had created or kind of solidified myself as a starter. And I worked hard, gave great effort, and was just basically living my dream. There were some slippage that started to happen. I had been morally living a pretty good life, but there was some areas of my life that did started to slip, and I had started to kind of indulge in sin in some ways. And during that summer, I got a call from one of my professors telling me that I needed to turn on the TV, that they're saying that there was a homicide, possible homicide, and that basketball players could be involved. Well, that was a call that I just never anticipated, didn't see coming. And sure enough, I this story unfolded where one of my teammates had shot and killed one of my other teammates, and the coaching staff that I had played almost 100 games for, they were doing a lot of things wrong. And in a span of 2 months, I lost 10 teammates and my entire coaching staff going into my senior year. So when that happened, when basketball fell apart, I realized that this faith that I thought I had really wasn't there. It was in a game. And I kind of fell apart at that point.
Wow. So give us a little more details on what happened. Who was it? Another player that was convicted? What happened with all those players and the coaching staff?
Yeah. The two guys that were in the locker room with me the year before, one, Carlton Dotson, he did in fact shoot and kill Patrick Dennehy, which was one of my other teammates. And they were roommates and friends and just not anything that I really would have seen happening at that time. And the coaching staff that, again, I played for almost 100 games and really trusted, they were when that happened with Patrick and Carlton, they started to investigate what was going on in our program and found out that there had been payment of players and some drug test violations. And this perfect program that I thought that I was a part of, man, it really, really seemed to be flawed. And there were a lot of problems and things going on. And I didn't see it happening. I didn't realize it right in front of me. So there's a little bit of, you know, I felt pretty dumb and like that I had been lied to and betrayed in a way there. And then, you know, we had a bunch of players. So once all that went down, the NCAA allowed our players to transfer. At that time, you had to sit out a year if you transfer. And they didn't have to do that. So they could leave with really no consequences. So when I say we lost 10 teammates, that means the two to the tragedy and scandal, and then eight others that decided not to come back. Well, to put that in perspective, every year you have three or four players that decide to leave your program, but they're usually not your best players. These were our stars and starters and guys that we were really going to rely on. So it was the complete dismantling of our program in the span of 2 months.
Wow. So did you still have a team, and why did you decide not to transfer?
That's a great question. In fact, my dad at the time, I called him looking for some answers and maybe, you know, some hope. And he said, "Matt, I just don't know if you're going to have a team next year." That was about the worst news that I could get at the time. It ended up that they didn't shut down our program. I went into my senior year with six scholarship players. And again, the to play against Kansas, Texas, you know, this is Big 12 basketball. Yeah. And where they have 13 All-Americans, we have six scholarship players that are really role players, not stars by any means. And then we had a handful of walk-ons that ended up playing huge roles for us during the season. So throughout the year, we had 10 to 11 players. Well, I didn't know who or what coach would take over a program like this. And sure enough, a 32-year-old Scott Drew was the one that took over, and he had these big dreams and these big plans for our program, for our future. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I couldn't really get on board with what my coach was saying.
So what happened that season with the team?
Yeah, it was difficult. We were losing a lot of games at the beginning that, I mean, honestly, our previous coach had scheduled those games for wins, automatic wins, so that when after Big 12, we would have a better record because Big 12 was so hard. But we were losing to those teams, and it was a different style of play. We weren't very good, and I was just angry and frustrated. I'd really thrown myself into the party scene at that point, and it really searching for any type of peace or hope, or not hope, but peace and joy in that, and just to be able to laugh a little bit and forget about my circumstances. But I was just pretty miserable. There is a point where the leftover story, it is an underdog story, and there is a point in that season where all of us band together. We really start to believe in each other. I was able to get on board with Coach Drew and his dream and start trusting him. And we did do some amazing things. Like, we weren't supposed to win a game. We were supposed to be, you know, 0-16 in the Big 12 and not be competitive at all. Well, we ended up beating some teams and being really competitive with some teams and setting a foundation that, and it's been cool over the years to see or to have people tell me that, you know, a few years ago when we made the Final Four, when we made the Sweet 16, and then last year when we won the national championship, for people to validate our choice to stick around, our choice to fight hard and play, they really appreciate what that team did back then.
Awesome. We're talking with Matt Saeman, author of the book, The Leftovers, Baylor, Betrayal, and Beyond. Matt, would you say basketball was your god?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And the scary thing with making, it could be a game. It could be a relationship. It could be a job for some people. Like, I got to remember that now. Even as a high school coach, that our program wins and losses can't take over my life to the point where that's what I worship. Because when basketball fell apart, I realized that I had no foundation and I was empty and I felt lost and I went searching. And when you go searching for peace, or you take control of your life and take control of your joy, man, that can take you down a dark path.
Hmm. When did you get to, and how did you get to that point when you handed that all over to Jesus Christ?
It was really a 9-year journey that I went on. After Baylor, I did go play in Iceland for 1 year, and it's the only place in the world that would ask me or have me play basketball for them. And my first practice over there, I thought I could get away from this story that I was a part of. My first practice, a teammate asked me in kind of broken English, where did you play? And I said, Baylor. And I thought he'd be really impressed by that. Well, he had this puzzled look on his face and he said, don't they kill people there?
Oh, gee.
And the story, yeah, that was day one. The story that I was a part of followed me there, but you know, so did my bad habits. And even though I was playing pretty good basketball at one point, I was asked to leave Iceland because of my bad habits. Hmm. And I came back home lost and frustrated, started during my 20s, during those 9 years, started coaching. And I was working with young people, but as a very angry, lost, bitter person myself. It was my 30th birthday, and I was alone in my apartment, just kind of wondering, is this really what life is supposed to be like? You know, because I had grown up, again, going to church. I had all this head knowledge, you know, saved. I prayed a prayer when I was 5 and was baptized when I was 5. But so I felt like I had all of the, or I knew all the answers. But then I just felt so helpless. A few days later, I went to a church that I didn't regularly visit, and I filled out a visitor card in the back, and on it I said, I'm angry and I have questions. And I kind of threw it, tossed it in the plate, never expecting to hear anything back. And a lady contacted me from that church, and we worked out a time where I could come in and see the pastor. She opened the door for me that day and kind of walked me back to him. I sat down and I basically laid out my story, just like I've kind of done with you today. And he kind of looked at me and said, Matt, you've got to give up control. And I said, no, listen, man, I know that. Like, I've grown up in church. I've already done that. Now why am I where I'm at? He's like, no, you haven't done that. And in fact, when you were 21, when things went bad in your life and your dream was crushed or taken from you, you actually took control of your life. You became Lord of your own life. And look what that's done. Like, look how it's gone for you. And basically, it was that first time that I ever surrendered and that I allowed Jesus to be Lord of my life. And the life change from that moment, not that I'm definitely not perfect, and we all continue to sin and fall short, but the things that I used to run to for comfort or when I was frustrated, they lost their appeal, and I wasn't drawn to those things anymore. God put someone in my life to help me on that journey, and that was my wife. She was the lady. When I tossed in that card, she was the lady that emailed me and that let me into that church that day. We got married about a year later. And the funny thing is, when I'm ever talking with young men, you know, I mention that story, and I jokingly say, fellas, just go to church, and your wife is waiting for you there. But I was just going into the church that day to vent and to complain. But God had way bigger plans and Jana, you know, in store for me.
We're chatting with Matt Saman, author of the book, The Leftovers, Baylor Betrayal and Beyond. Let's focus a little more on the betrayal. Define that for us. And what would you say to those that have feelings of betrayal?
Well, you know, I put a lot of trust in my coaches, and I had been taught that at a young age to whatever your coach says, trust in him or her, believe in them, and do your very, very best. You know, so from a young age, I would consider myself kind of a coach's dream, and the fact that I was respectful, I didn't do anything wrong, and I would, whatever you told me to run through a brick wall, I was going to try. And because of that mentality, I mean, I really thrown myself and all my belief in these coaches. And, you know, you got to be a little bit careful there. I would say throwing all of your trust and belief in people. I mean, the lie is the idea that we think that we're good or that there's good people. Why do bad things happen to good people? Well, there's the lie. There's no good people. You know, like, we're all flawed and we're all sinners. And so even though you trust in and you can believe in a coach, you got to be careful how much, if you put all your faith in them, all of your trust, if you rely on them for everything, if they're, and that, not just a coach, but anyone, you've got to make sure who your foundation is in, who your faith is in, and it's got to be in Christ. That would be one of the biggest things to me is people will at times let you down. And you still love them throughout that, but you don't fall apart because of it. And if you are feeling that way, that needs to be alarms going off in your head that your hope may be in the wrong person, in the wrong thing.
Matt, what would you say to young men out there that are in either, you know, grade school, middle school, high school basketball? What would you say to them if those might have aspirations to go on to college and even the NBA?
Well, playing, having those aspirations is great. I think God gives us passions in our lives, things that we're drawn to, things that we're good at, naturally good at, that we pick up. Or if you feel like I love working on my game, like, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But I would caution them to make sure that their identity isn't wrapped up in that game. I mean, I don't know. I can't pinpoint the moment when I stopped being Matt Saman, the Christ follower, and became Matt Saman, the basketball player. Like, I don't know when that happened, but it happened pretty quick. And because of that, when you put your hope and your trust and your faith in a game that can, I mean, you can be walking down the street and have an injury that ends your career. Well, at that point, if basketball isn't, it can't be a part of it anymore, you know, who are you? What's your foundation in? But then I would say this, if you do have those aspirations, continue to work your tail off. Don't allow anybody to outwork you or do more than you. but everything that you do, it's for the glory of God. It's to glorify Him, not yourself. Like, you see these people that are reaching for fame, reaching for success. What's their main goal? A lot of the times it's to exalt themselves or to have a higher place in this world. Well, as we know, like, this isn't our place. This isn't our world. So I think we're meant to be excellent, to work for that, to try to be our very, very best and to glorify Him. But man, we got to always keep the main thing the main thing.
Yeah. And how did your experience help you as a coach?
It helped a ton, but I would say more becoming a believer helped me to be a better coach. Because even before that, I had the basketball knowledge and experience to be a competent coach, meaning I knew the X's and O's, and I could communicate them well, and I could train and develop players. But unfortunately, I wasn't helping them as young men at all. I was very transactional with everything that I was doing. If you play well for me, then I'll be happy with you and continue to support you. The moment you can't do that, I'm going to move on to the next guy. And unfortunately, I feel like there's a lot of players that when I was a younger coach, I need to go back and really apologize to them for just not being better for them at that time. Mm. Now it's kind of fun getting to coach where I coach at Grapevine Faith, but also reminding myself to keep Christ the main thing, but the main thing with how I coach too, being transformational instead of transactional and making sure that I don't lead my players down a path that I went on.
Very good. We've been chatting with Matt Saeman. The book is The Leftovers, Baylor, Betrayal, and Beyond. Matt, where can people get a copy of the book?
Right now, the best place is on Amazon. And I would love for you guys to check out the book. And I'd love to hear from you, too. And you can contact me, either go through social media. It's Matt_Saeman. Or email me at saeman.matt@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you and help any way that I can.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you, Matt. And if you missed that contact information, just give us a call or text here at the studio. Matt, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been great talking with you. Loved hearing your transformation. And may God bless your team and your future and your family. And keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on.